Welcome to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast with your hosts, Richard Hill and Matthew Darlitz.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. My name is Matthew Darlitz, Editor-in-Chief of the Science of Psychotherapy. And as always, I'm here with Managing Editor and good friend, Richard Hill. Hi, Richard.
Hey, Matt, how fantastic to see you. Yes, you're my good friend too. That's bloody lucky, isn't it? Because otherwise we'd never put up with each other. But it's always great to be in here having a chat. And yes. And I love the way that we're just meeting so many people. I was just looking the other day at some of the people we've met and some of the people we're talking to, and I mentioned it to another friend of mine, and I said, I sort of talked to this person and that person, and they went, "Do you?" I said, yeah, we do. So it's really great. So we have a lot of fun.
We do. We have a broad network. Now, today, Richard, I just wanted it to be us and just to talk with you. Because you have a rather sad announcement to make. And so I wanted you to make that announcement to all of our listeners, and then we'll have a little bit of a chat about it. So over to you.
Oh, yes, Matt. It's something that I've been kind of expecting or waiting for, but my dear friend, mentor, co-author, is almost my dad, really.
Yeah.
Ernest Rossi. Mm. Ernest Rossi has sadly passed away on September the 19th, mm-hmm. just towards the end of the evening. It was a little after 11 o'clock. He didn't have quite the wit in him to last another hour, and so he could go out on 20 of 2020. Right. Which would be great, but anyway, joking is necessary, and it fits very much because Catherine, his lovely wife, and also colleague and co-author, we were in firm contact throughout the way, Ernie knew it was time, mm-hmm. and it was fantastic that he made sure that he and I wrote the Mirroring Hands book, and that we filled the book with lots of good thinking and good knowledge that gives me the task to move on. So
now you've got quite a deep history with Ernie, and you've spent a lot of time with him, quite apart from being colleagues together, writing the book that you did. But very much like you said, he's been almost like a father figure to you.
Yeah, I think father, big brother. I drink beer and he drinks stout.
Right.
So we've learnt those things. But, I mean, it was quite fascinating, just as as I've been sort of reminiscing over the story, was 2005 was when I first encountered him, or encountered me. I always think that Ernie suffered much more than I did. But I went to the Milton Erickson Foundation Evolution of Psychotherapy conference because I'd actually seen Dan Siegel and Lou Cozzolino in Sydney in the earlier parts of the year. And Dan said, "Well, I'm speaking at this conference," so I go, "Oh, I'll go to that." And everybody who was everybody was speaking at this conference. Albert Bandura, Aaron Beck, Albert Ellis. I thought, "Oh my God, this is all the people in the bookshelf." So I went over, and I had no idea who this Ernest Rossi guy was, but he was first lecture, and he was talking about genetics and brain plasticity and this thing, psychosocial genomics. I thought, wow, this looks cool. So I went along, and I always sort of jokingly say that the conference was they needed to supply you with some cream, some salve of some sort to put at the bottom of your jaw, because basically your jaw hit the floor at the first lecture, and you get it off the floor for 5 days. But he was just there talking about the nature of gene expression during therapeutic work, which we went on to as I became more involved, and we went on to do experiments and research looking at this, and it proved to be exactly as he predicted. And it was
now he was quite ahead of his time, wasn't he? From way before then as well, before you encountered him.
He was talking about genes in the 90s. He was talking about gene expression. His sort of seminal book, The Psychobiology of Gene Expression, was in 2002, and it was sort of a little bit interrupted because he finished the book and he had a stroke.
Right. Yes.
And he talks about this stroke, how odd it was, and weird. He woke up and he felt, you know, his arm wasn't doing what it wanted to do, and all these various difficulties. But I just love people saw Ernie. He wasn't the most social person that I've known. There's lots of stories we could share there. I'll give some in a minute. But he was incredibly. Although he was Italian, there was sort of Irishy sort of humour, and he tells the story of when he was in the hospital and getting rehabilitation. So they had the therapist there, and they had to. The idea is you use small tweezers and you pick up things to try and get back motor movement.
Right. Yeah.
Now Ernie knows and understands the psychobiology and the neurobiology, that there's about 12 weeks in order to rebuild synaptic frameworks, and that people start to have a psychological wall at about 6 weeks, maybe 4 to 6 weeks, and they start to think, oh, this will never work, it's hopeless. So Ernie had been there doing this, is doing this work, and the nurse, the therapist comes along and says, well, that's right, Mr. Rossi. You know, doesn't know who he is, he's just Mr. Rossi. That's right, Mr. Rossi, pick up the items. And obviously, that beautiful, he said, that sing-songy tone of you're an idiot.
Yeah.
And he said, I looked up, because his mouth wasn't working, and he looked up at her and he said, it's okay. I wrote the book.
He wrote the book.
He just written the psychobiology gene expression. And the therapist looked down at him and said, yes, that's right, Mr. Rossi. I'm sure you did. Now just keep picking up those bits of stuff.
Oh, dear.
But there's another lovely story with talking about the social nature of him with Bill O'Hanlon.
Yeah.
And he was great. I mean, it took a long time. It took me 3 or 4 years of just constantly being there to show him and prove to him that I wasn't just a sycophant. You know, I wasn't just. Yeah. And I had to produce, not had to, but I produced confident thinking and I think that there was one time he eventually, after several, quite a few emails, he wrote back and he said, oh, that's an interesting idea. I hadn't thought of that.
Right.
And I had no idea how impactful that was. But that was a real turning point, he said, in the way we go. He says, I can see you're not just, you know, you got a bit of brains in your head. But it was very funny. And Bill tells this story about earlier on, sort of, and that was the early 2000s. But anyway, Ernie's sitting in the van. They were in a van with a bunch of speakers. And everyone got out to do something, a little pit stop of some sort. And Bill turned around and it was just Ernie. And he thought, oh, great, Dr. Rossi. I can speak to Dr. Rossi. So he said, Dr. Rossi, I'm Bill O'Hanlon and very nice to meet you. And Ernie looked at him in the inimitable way he would have and he said, oh, yes, very nice to meet you. And then Bill was probably waiting for the conversation of tell me something about yourself, whatever. Anyway, Ernie got up. He said he got up, moved out of the van, went round, leant against the van, and pretty much as far as Bill could tell, looked at a street sign,
right,
for the next half an hour while everybody went. Now, Bill was sort of going on, but I know what was happening with Ernie. He was sitting in the van because he had an idea.
Right. It was processing.
Something was cooking.
Yeah.
And Bill is sort of, and so Bill came along and said something. And Ernie went, so, oh, human being, oh, no, you're in the way. And so just went. I was having dinner with him one time, and he, I'm a little effusive. People tell me.
And I would never have guessed.
There he is. And Ernie just took a break. I mean, we were at dinner, and he said, I'll be back in a minute. I thought he was going to the bathroom, but I looked at him, and he was just taking a little walk.
Yeah, no, I need a break from you.
I need a break from me. Yeah, you know. So, but I knew him by then. I said, yeah. And then, of course, that's the Ultradian pause. That's all these things, right, and so on and so forth. So extraordinary sort of experiences.
Yeah. Tell us a little bit about. So there's a lineage here that some of our listeners might not be aware of. So talk to us a bit about that.
Yeah. This really humbles me a bit, because Milton Erickson, and that's the foundation, the Milton Erickson Foundation, beautifully and fantastically run by Jeff Zeig, and these conferences every year. And Milton Erickson is arguably one of the most influential persons in psychotherapy, and particularly in hypnosis.
Absolutely,
And the hypnotherapy, the combination of the two elements, and probably the reason why he is not absolutely hugely well known is because he didn't teach a particular process. Right. He had a sort of an approach and a style, but he wasn't there saying, you know. It wasn't an ABCD.
He wasn't pushing a brand or a...
No. So it's really hard to... People still try and teach him. And Erickson used to say, the only person who can do Ericksonian hypnotherapy is Erickson. You all have to do your own, which, of course, is what Ernie did. Well, Ernie latched onto this, discovered, read a really important book and about Erickson, and latched onto him in the early 1970s. He went along sort of ostensibly as a patient, as a client. And after half a dozen visits or so, Erickson just turned to him and said, you're not here as a client. You're here to learn. So stop paying for the sessions and I'll see you next time.
Right.
And Ernie would go, he would drive 8 hours from to Phoenix.
Really?
For a week every month for this whole decade, pretty much. I'm sure there were a few he missed, but principally. Yep. He would stay in sort of a bit of a shed, small accommodation, just a single room with him for a week, and they would sit there and he would work with him. And it was interesting, Roxana, Erickson's daughter, Roxana Erickson Klein, we were talking just a couple of years ago, and she said Erickson had said that her best student, her most important student and her most important colleague was Rossi. It used to be Cheek. But it became Rossi. There was Ravitz and Cheek and then Rossi. And so, of course, Erickson died in 1980, sadly, very suddenly. And I pick up with Ernie in 2005.
Right.
And so there are others. I mean, there's many offshoots of Rossi, as there are many offshoots of Erickson. There it is. In this particular lineage, particularly with the mirroring hands and the client responsive approach that we work so hard now on, it's Erickson, Rossi, and me.
Yeah, and I find it very fascinating, this very personal one-on-one mentorship that not organized by any institution or anything. I mean, completely spontaneous from your motivation and initiative. To connect with Rossi.
And like Erickson, Erickson said to Rossi, now you're learning, stop paying. I'm sorry. That's a little bit. No wonder he was so unusual. He did the same thing with Zeig, same thing with Gilligan. He also taught a wonderful Australian chap, Rob McNeely, but he charged Rob. I'm not quite sure where that was. But Ernie never charged me, and yeah. I would visit. I mean, it was he would just embraced the enthusiasm, but he didn't do anything to encourage me to stay. Just the same as with Ericsson. I mean, Ericsson said to Ernie, you know, you can write papers and you can write books, and they wrote lots of papers together and several books together. And he said, but I will always be the senior author and you will always be the junior author, even if you do all the work.
Right.
And when I was writing the Mirroring Hands book, Ernie said, you're doing a lot of this work, aren't you? And I said, well, yeah. He said, we should both have our names on this cover, and I think your name should be first.
Right.
I just, wow.
Yeah,
and,
wonderful.
And it is, and yeah. Because at least a third of the book is actually my own work, so yeah. My contribution to the thinking.
Yeah. Now, what would you say the most profound, important things that Ernest has delivered to psychotherapy world in his lifetime?
Wow. Yeah. Let me see. We'll just make a list. So I think if there's one of the things that I think is the most important thing that he has contributed to the world is not a particular thing. It's a concept. And the concept is keep thinking.
Mm.
Work this out. Figure the framework. Now, that idea of there's always something more to discover is what I'm meaning. Not sort of thinking as in navel gazing and furrowing your brow. Mm. It's what else is there? What else? Where else? What can we go? What more? What's new? What's better? What's deeper? What's different? What have we missed?
Mm-hmm.
And that's what he constantly pressed me with.
Yeah. So when I was fortunate enough to have a conversation with him with you on our podcast, and I don't know if it was before or after we were recording, and, you know, and he was talking about all of these different disciplines that would inform sort of his thought process and some of the things that he was trying to nut out. And he wasn't afraid to go beyond the boundaries of, you know, brain science and psychotherapy. He was talking about all different sorts of things. And so...
And he was right amongst all these people. I mean, in his book, there's a psychobiology gene expression. I mean, there's more before that. I'm just looking at the others. Just got a few listeners. The mind-body therapy, which he did with David Cheek.
Right.
That was where he first introduced the term psychodynamic idiodynamic, not psychodynamic, idiodynamic responses. Because David Cheek was the originator of this idea of an idiomotor response.
Yeah.
And that you could get an implicit, you could make a connection through hypnosis or at least focused attention. You could make a connection to the implicit world through a motor response where you might get a one finger that represented that would move spontaneously to say yes and another one which would move spontaneously to say no. And I think people sort of think, oh, what's this magic stuff? But you have exactly that. Happening spontaneously, people on facial expressions. I mean, when you're talking to someone and you're asking them whether some sort of question, very often you know when they've said yes or no well before they've uttered a word. You know, their face, you know, particularly if you're asking them to do something for you, you'll get it very, very, very rapidly on the idiomotor response of facial expressions.
Yeah.
So it was an extension of that idea. Mm. And Ernie said, no, there's more to it. That's all too contrived because there's not only something like these facial expressions or being able to have one finger move or another, because they didn't always do it when you're trying to contrive it. So if you look at the idiodynamic response, so you'll have an idiomotor response, an idio-emotional response, an idio-pain response, an idio-pleasure response, you know. So all these different types of possibilities, then that's what led to his idea of extending Erickson's concept of sensitive, of observation. How do you do good therapy? Observe, 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 observe. It's to observe, 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 observe on many levels.
Yeah.
So you need to be dynamically engaged with your client, not just motor movement perceptive and observant.
And his observation, not only of the human condition and psychology and physiology, but his observation of things like classical physics, quantum mechanics, pulling all of these things in, seeing, being an amazing pattern recognizer in all of these other fields, and bring them in and be able to come up with new and fresh ideas, I think is incredible.
Yeah, he was talking about the extended engagement from brain to body. I say way back with Cheek back in the 90s, but in the psychobiology of gene expression, you have going down into the gut and talking about the different not only neurological and aspects. It wasn't talking so much about the vagus as then Stephen Porges went on to, but it was in there, but talking about the biochemical milieu, the biochemical framework, because he did his original academic work in chemistry.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
He was a chemist. Okay.
Yeah, so he was. His family thought, oh, great, he's going to open a pharmacy and, and he'll, you know. Ernie, his grandmother, is very funny, sort of in Italian. She not pleasantly, rather insultingly, said, "Ah, Ernie, who never finishes," because he would keep on doing what they keep thinking. Oh, he's done his degree, now he can get a job, and he'll be fine. He says, "Oh no," and he did all his undergraduate and then the ongoing aspects there and up into his PhD, all on scholarships.
Yeah. Yeah.
Whereas when he started primary school, he couldn't even speak English. He was from Italian heritage, and they put him in the dummies class. They put him in the challenged class, and then they discovered that he forced them to notice that he was actually really smart. But he knew Ada and the psychoneuroimmunology. I mean. God, it's just so amazing when I would sit there talking to him. And he said, oh, yes, and I used to spend time and we would discuss these things, these amazing names, that would be down there, that, you know, Bateson and Rabbits and Cheek and all these extraordinary people who would sort of wander by Milton Erickson's place, and Ernie would talk about them and chat with them and learn from them. And I think he probably taught them a bit as well.
Yeah, I'm wondering, are there some classic books that you could point people to who are interested in finding out more about Ernest Rossi and his legacy?
Well, I think the Psychobiology of Gene Expression is a really seminal book that covers a lot of ground. And I still have friends of mine contacting me saying, look, I've just managed to get into chapter 2 of this book and I'm having a bit of trouble. Could you help me out? Because it goes into great detail. But if you take time, you can see what Ernie's doing. There's some lovely ones that came up. The mind-body therapy with David Cheek is really interesting as a foundational one and to see how far we've gone. But let me look at some of the things. The breakout heuristic is one he brought out, creating consciousness. He'd been constantly looking all this time, and we've had long conversations about consciousness and the nature of it, and trying to figure out Chalmers' question.
That's a slippery one, isn't it? It always does my head in when we're getting conversations about consciousness.
Well, there's a lovely story. Just quickly, we were having lunch. I was visiting, fortunate to be over there, and I was visiting. We went off to a club. I think it was a yacht club or a boat club or something. Because there was a river there. And anyway, for some strange reason, we went in there, I don't know, about 11:45 or something, and quarter to midday, and the waitress said, look, I'm sorry, the kitchen's closed till 1:00.
Oh.
We just thought, oh, well, that's exceptionally odd. Anyway, it doesn't matter. It was a very nice view out over the terrain, and so we got a couple of beers and I think some cheese or something to soak that up. And Ernie pulled out a book that he'd been reading. Now, I don't have it. What's the name? Anyway, a very in-depth look and through the physics, the chemistry, and also with quantum and all kinds of interesting stuff. And he turned to a page towards the back, and there was a whole bunch of notes and annotations in it. And we began discussing these two or three paragraphs about consciousness. Hmm. And I tell you, I wish we'd had the microphone there. I think there was some amazing sort of thoughts and possibilities and things. So anyway, we're doing that. And time, of course, then just flew by. We didn't even notice it. And the next thing, the waitress is back saying, the kitchen is open now. And Ernie and I sort of looked up with a bit of sort of interruption, sort of like, what do you mean? What are you talking about? I looked at her, and I guess my Australian twang was very useful, made me a little bit impish. And I just said, look, I'm terribly sorry, but we're not ready. We haven't yet solved the question of consciousness. And the waitress just looked at us. And I don't know, I think we were a little unkempt that day. And she looked at us a moment, and then her sort of eyes sort of widened. And she, I could see her thinking, oh, I think they're actually right. You know, that's true. So anyway. She took our order to fish. We had more beers. And that was just one of the most delightful and mentally invigorating afternoons I've had.
Yeah, yeah, wonderful. So we're very fortunate that he has written, you know, a lot of, you know, his amazing thoughts down. So we have a legacy there. And we'll... just for our listeners, we'll put links in the show notes for those books if they want to go and have a look at them.
And the good news is that you can actually go to his website. We'll put that ErnestRossi.com.
Oh, okay, yep.
And he has made a contracted version, but it's still, you know, 40 or 50 pages or something, that you can download for free.
Okay.
So that's quite handy. You can get in and just see the... It's not the complexity or the difficulty, it's the intricacy of his ideas. And he was working really hard to understand how we can engage with the aspect of quantum mechanics in trying to understand, does that give us some kind of insight and answer into what psychology is all about? And we wrote about this in the Mirroring Hands book, the Practitioner's Guide to Mirroring Hands. I wrote a sort of a chapter which gave us a layman's, but a not terribly deep understanding required to give us an understanding. But then we've got this incredible thing in the appendix, which will take you all through the fascinating mathematics and the possibilities that quantum offers us. As different from, unfortunately, what a lot of people do with quantum is saying, oh, now we know all the answers. Well,
no,
don't even know what quantum is yet.
Not even close, yeah.
Not even close yet, yeah.
And, of course, you know, Catherine Rossi, in her own right, you know, she's quite a thinker as well. And we've published some things that she's written about yoga.
Yes, she's gone particularly into that area, looking at the nature of the physical, the body expression of what's going on, which, of course, as we know, Bessel van der Kolk's been talking a lot about. Well, here's Catherine doing it and combining it to gene expression and quantum mechanics and all those wonderful things. So she's fabulous.
And my heart goes out to her. Yeah, how is she going at this time?
She's fabulous. I mean, you know, we were all expecting, and it was 87 and a half. The stroke came in, you know, early 2000, and by golly, it borrowed time. Some people talk about borrowed time as they lasted long. Ernie wrote four or five, six books, He mentored me. He mentored the group in Italy who have been doing the psychosocial genomics research. Then we've got people in France. There's a whole bunch of people. I'm learning the extent of the web.
Wow.
And Catherine's there now. Says I cry, but I laugh.
Yeah.
And that's probably exactly what Ernie would love.
Yeah, wonderful. Well, Richard, thank you so much for sharing with us a little of that history and your personal journey as well. And we will miss him.
Yeah, but I really appreciate you. Just sometimes, what do? You talk about these things.
Yeah.
And so we've talked about it privately, but I'm kind of, I feel uplifted having been able to share some of the, mostly just stories.
Yeah, yeah. And that's how we connect, isn't it? We're very, this story-driven brain of ours, that's how we connect.
It helps us make sense of things. And I was standing with Ernie 3 or 4 years ago. We were at Ericsson conference and we're drying up the plates. We had, you know, a few people we had for dinner, and he looked up at me and he said, "Well, Richard, you know, you were just so enthusiastic. I couldn't turn you down." And, you know, because my heart melted, and then my head said to me, "You could have bloody told me that 10 years ago." But that was where we were.
Yeah, yeah. Well, thanks, Richard. And thank you, everyone, for joining us here on the podcast. We really do appreciate you tuning in and spending time with us and our guests. It's a lot of fun, isn't it, Richard?
It certainly is.
We love the sort of the network that we're creating here at the Science of Psychotherapy, and we're glad that you can join in with us.
Yeah, and we've got some fabulously interesting people coming up. So tune in each week.
Absolutely. Well, thanks, Richard. Thanks, everybody. And we'll catch you next week.
Bye for now.
Thanks for listening to the Science of Psychotherapy podcast. For more great science, go to thescienceofpsychotherapy.com.